you can host the best backyard barbecue. When you find a professional on Angie to make your backyard the best around. Connect with skilled professionals to get all your home projects done well. Inside to outside, repairs to renovations. Get started on the Angie app or visit Angie.com today. You can do this when you Angie that.
Getting the smile and confidence you've been dreaming about, all from the comfort of your home, isn't a total mystery with Bite Clear Aligners. Just don't be surprised if all your friends start asking, "What's your secret?" Begin by ordering your at-home impression kit today for only $14.95. Bite Clear Aligners are doctor-directed and delivered to your door. Treatment costs thousands less than braces, plus they offer flexible financing, accept eligible insurance, and you can pay with your HSA FSA. Get 80% off your impression kit when you use code WONDERY at Byte.com. That's BYTE.com. Start your confidence journey today with Byte.
Hello, everybody. I'm Nikki Novak, and welcome to another episode of The After Show. Today, we are going to be talking about a very, very special film, one that's very near and dear to a lot of people, Glass Onion, A Knives Out Mystery.
You're all friends. Why would anyone commit murder?
Are we even going to talk about the elephant in the room?
Am I the elephant?
Yeah, you're the elephant.
You're not that bad.
It is going to be a spoiler-filled discussion. So guys, if you haven't seen the movie, watch along. No, just kidding. Watch the movie and then come back and revisit this chat. Grab a pineapple juice, whatever, pick your poison, whatever your pleasure is, and sit back and enjoy our chat. I am so excited to introduce our guest, Andreas Cabrera. Welcome, welcome, welcome. The host of The Meaning of Podcast.
Yes.
Welcome. We're doing this in person.
We are. This is crazy.
I'm so excited. First of all, I'm going to talk about the tomato meter score and the audience score because it is a match. And this almost never happens. 93% tomato meter score, 93% audience score. Of course, that means it is certified fresh. And here is the critics' consensus. Glass Onion, A Knives Out Mystery brings back Benoit Blanc for another wildly entertaining mystery rounded out by an outstanding ensemble cast. So first and foremost, let's break the ice. Do you concur with the 93-93?
I do concur.
Okay. I thought you were going to say you didn't for a second. I'm going to
no,
be like,
I
are
do.
You the 7%? No, are you one
I
of those 7%?
Indeed not the 7%. I do concur. I think this movie is an absolute blast. A lot of twists and turns. It definitely follows up the Knives Out kind of traditional storytelling that Rian Johnson has created with his own formula, his own style, his own flair into bringing this new kind of mystery, Agatha Christie kind of vibes to this new story. But it feels like it still has the same thematic elements to it. And it just has enough character interaction, enough thematic elements, if that makes sense. So I feel like this definitely lives up to the Knives Out movie franchise now that we have, right?
I love that we can now, I think we can officially now call it a franchise. I found it really, really interesting how that movie, the original Knives Out, sort of like came out of the gate and people were so, there was so much surprise in it because it was really something, even though, like you said, it's like an Agatha Christie and he has cited Agatha Christie as his inspiration many times over for this franchise. But the big question is always, can somebody follow up something that is such a phenomenon? And it is trending. It is constantly, Glass Onion is constantly trending. It's been trending, I feel like, ever since it came out in the theaters at Thanksgiving, and it keeps going, and the different characters keep going. That's hard to do. Here's the thing, and I was thinking about this, because I've watched it 4 times now.
Oh, wow.
And for different reasons, but when I watch the first one, and then when I watch this one, and the cast has said this, it's not really about the reveal. And what makes, I think, it so good is a couple of things. The fact that you can rewatch it and keep finding Easter eggs. And fourth watch, I was seeing new things that I hadn't seen before. But something that is hard to do is an ensemble comedy. And they really leaned more into the comedy this time, I felt like. But the ensemble comedy, and I was thinking, who else does an ensemble comedy? And the only one I could really think of was like Guardians of the Galaxy, in a sense, is like an ensemble comedy. Mm. But also the fact that it is star-studded.
Yes.
And that he puts together these casts. And now I feel like, and I don't know if you agree, now you're going to have people calling Rian Johnson, going, I want to be in the next one. It's kind of like bragging rights to be in the next one.
Yeah, I kind of feel like a lot of the actors in this one wanted to be in this one because of the first one.
Yeah.
Because they saw the first one, appreciated it, and realized how much fun it is, but also how much you can actually communicate within these movies. I was one of the few people who said that the first one should have gotten a lot more awards recognition, even maybe even Oscar recognition, to the point now that finally this one is almost making up for the first one, because now this one is getting a lot more awards recognition. And I think the actors in these movies are realizing, wait a minute, can I be in an awards-worthy movie and still have a blast? And that's kind of what this movie is.
Well, this is, yeah, and this is Netflix's, I would say, big awards hopeful for this award season. We're going to get into it a little bit later, because Rian was nominated for Best Original Screenplay. This time it would be an adapted screenplay, which I find really interesting that it's now considered to be adapted. And I think there was a little bit of debate about that. But for sure, I mean, I think people have talked about Chanel, possibly. But let's talk about, like, what aspects of the film do you think makes it work the most? I mean, I think first and foremost, it's completely original. Mm. Other than you have a couple other, you know, franchises that are doing murder mysteries, but I feel like nobody does it like with this sort of comedy and the element of modern. Like, it feels very of the now.
Yeah.
And it feels very fresh. Of course, this one, he leaned into so many like contemporary pop culture jokes and cameos and that kind of thing. And I think when you, people spoiled it for me. So I did go into it knowing about the Renner thing. Oh. And I knew about the, you know, the Serena Williams thing. I knew most of the cameos. I knew about the Hugh Grant. So it did take away the element of surprise for me. But what worked for you the most about this?
I really do feel, and it might be the most basic answer there is, but I really do feel like it's the thematic elements. It's the amount of social commentary, political commentary, satirical commentary that Rian Johnson provides in all his movies, but especially in this movie, like you said, about the relevancy of it, the modernness of it, where it feels like it's communicating so much about our world now, not just like our world a couple years ago, not just like a big broad message, but a message about what is going on now when it comes to the one percenters, when it comes to tech billionaires, when it comes to politicians, all these kind of people who have a lot of money and who get a lot of money by usually stepping on a lot of people. I think a lot of people can relate to that. Turn on the news, turn on TV. This is usually what they're talking about. So seeing a movie kind of taking down the big dogs, the one percenters, and talking about how they are actually not as cool as a lot of people think they are, not as smart as a lot of people think they are, is something that to me was so fresh and so relevant and so well done, because it's hard to do, right? It's really hard to communicate a message about today's world and not step on too many people's toes, but Rian Johnson does it so well.
Well, that's what you just, the reason I was laughing, I was not laughing at you, I was laughing because the real big reason why Benoit Blanc, who is such a, you know, great at solving murder mysteries, and he says, this one has baffled my brain, and this one I cannot figure out. And the reason is because he gave Ed Norton's character too much credit, and the big twist is, you're stupid. Yeah. That's why I couldn't figure this out. I was giving you way too much credit, and that was when it all started to unravel. So he really did. But I feel like as much as he is making a commentary, I didn't really hear much backlash, because usually you get that in the public eye, but I feel like he did it in such a way that it was in such good fun, in good spirits, that nobody got super offended. Okay, so the big question is, before we dive into the details of the movie, better than Knives Out, on par with Knives Out, not as good as Knives Out?
I have a very, very soft spot in my heart for Knives Out, the first one.
Okay.
I feel like it's just so expertly well done, and I feel like the originality of seeing it the first time, there's something special about it. There's just something so good about seeing this done the first time around that I feel like it's just a little bit better. But this one is, I feel like it's different enough to where the comparison is there, but it doesn't necessarily line up directly with the same even tone. Because a lot of people have mentioned this, but the tone of this one, like you said, is a lot more comedic, a lot more like a comedy, like an ensemble comedy, whereas the first one featured comedic elements, but was much more centered around the main character and just the mystery of it all. And this one is centered around much more as far as Miles Braun's character and what he's trying to do, and then the comedy surrounding him with this cast. So I feel like it's just different enough, but I still feel like the first one's a little better.
There was something about the family element of the first one that you really felt more of the interaction between all the key players. And I felt like there was more character development, or maybe it was the performances. I'm not really sure. But when I went back and watched it, I was like, how is Jamie Lee Curtis not nominated? And I'm a member of the Critics' Choice, and I remember voting for Toni Collette for supporting for that one and being like, she's got to be. She's so... But every single performance in the first one, I feel like the characters were so fleshed out. And as a family, you felt they had something vested in each other. Or I felt like in this one, they're on this island together, and there were so many times where they were like, I'm so bored. I was like, first of all, I would not be bored on that island. But they didn't really seem like they wanted to be around each other.
Sure.
So it makes you as a viewer go, well, you know, do I want to spend, you know, do I want to spend that time? So that part, for those reasons, and I felt like the actual murder mystery of it all was so tightly wound. And I loved the twist at the end with the, oh, she gave him the correct medication. And Ana de Armas, I thought that was a breakthrough performance.
Yes.
To date, her best performance.
Yes.
And that was the heart of the film. And this one, I guess you would say Janelle Monáe was the heart of the film. Mm-hmm. So how did you feel about, let's first talk about Benoit Blanc and his evolution. How did you feel, you know, we obviously find out he has a boyfriend who he lives with, who is Hugh Grant. We see him in a bathtub that I'm not really sure I want to, like, I think Ryan and he both said in the first one, we don't want to know Benoit Blanc's backstory. We don't want to know who his parents are. There's something about him being shrouded in mystery and he's just there to solve the crime, where I feel like we got a little bit more of a peek into who he was. And he was a lot goofier this time.
Yeah.
Even his wardrobe was a little bit goofier, right?
Yeah.
Which
I mean, you're
rocking
it.
This is a full of, I mean, I don't have a problem with it, but you know. So how did you feel about his evolution?
I loved it. I feel like, I know a lot of people might have complained about this. I saw a little bit of people complaining as far as this isn't the Benoit Blanc we saw in the first movie. And maybe that is the case. But I feel like adding a little bit more flair, adding a little bit more comedy, a little bit more eccentricity as far as what Daniel Craig is bringing to this character. To me, it's him adding that to it. And to me, it's also, it's kind of cool, I think, to see a character like Benoit Blanc be the world's greatest detective, a Kentucky Southern guy, like having this weird mix of like genius detective, Southern Kentucky, like it's this weird combination that Rian Johnson has created to make this kind of satirical character as far as what it is to even be inside this country that we live in this class, right? Because I feel like almost every single little detail inside Knives Out and inside Glass Onion is a commentary on something. And I feel like his character is also a commentary on what it is to be a Southern Kentucky raised kind of person, where he has this very, very thick accent. And yet that accent that we associate usually with being like, oh, you're not as smart. It's like, no, he's the smartest person in the world, essentially inside this world. So I really feel like that adds so much to the character and his endearment with working class people, with people who work in services, people like Martha in the first movie, Janelle Monáe's character, Helen, in this movie, Alabama teachers, nurses, those kind of people that Benoit Blanc caters to me, says a lot about his character. And I feel like Daniel Craig delivers that to like an incredible level.
You just so nailed it. And that's something I never thought about. I remember like in the first one, Anna's character, he loved her because he loved her pureness of spirit. And that is something, that's a skill to be able to suss out a good person from a bad person and to have that affinity. And I agree with you. I think Daniel Craig, I think Ryan is like, do what you want. Yeah. And Daniel Craig is like, having so much fun.
Yes.
And he's talked about, like, James Bond, how was just, he was so done.
Yeah.
And I think probably more physically, for the physical demands than anything else. But how many people can actually follow up huge success in a franchise like that and turn around and start another franchise and another iconic character back to back like that?
Yeah.
You know, and then you think about Rian Johnson, who also brought in Chris Evans, and that became an iconic character, and that freaking sweater was iconic. Like, it's amazing, and he came off, you know, he came off Marvel. So it's kind of cool the way he allows, because we see a lot of times these actors who are in franchises, and they get out, and they're like, I just want to do something different. We're like, we don't care. We want to see really that one character the rest of your life. And then they try something else, and it doesn't work, right?
Yeah.
And you're just, go ahead.
No, well, to me, it's this idea of, what I loved about the first one and what I think this one does so well as well is the idea of bringing in these actors who, like you said, have done major, huge projects before and want to get into some much more awards-worthy kind of recognition kind of movies
right.
to really expand their careers. And what's ironic is that they're choosing this movie in a very comedic way where they're able to get the same amount of recognition, have the same, but have even more fun, probably, than doing a, you know, if Daniel Craig does like a really dark and gritty, you know, drama movie, but instead he's doing this, and he's still probably getting the same amount of awards attention.
I was wondering, when I mentioned the bathtub, I'm like, I don't know if I needed to see that. But I think it's so funny. Tell me if you think this is true or not. That in James, like as James Bond, there was always a shirtless scene, right? He always was coming out of the water. There was always that quintessential slow-mo. Was this Daniel Craig's nod to, I'm going to sit in a tub with like a hat on my head and be a total geek and have my boyfriend yelling at me like, are you still in the tub? Like, was that his kind of homage to, I'm not going to be that guy anymore?
It could be, yeah.
Yeah.
I mean, it definitely could be. I also feel like it's an homage to just what it was during COVID and
yes.
during quarantine.
Yes.
Like a lot of people were sitting in their tubs
turning
depressed. And just really like Skyping people and Zooming people and just being like, you know, what do we do now? Like, we just played
yeah.
this game, so.
Okay, so let's talk about Janelle Monáe and her duality. What did you think of her performance and what did you think of the twist?
Yeah.
Did you see it coming at all?
I did not.
Okay.
I did not. And I really liked it. I really did feel like at first it's jarring, right? Because you hear the thick Alabama accent after we already met Andy and after
yeah.
we already see how Andy is acting. So once we meet Helen, you're just kind of like, what is happening? This is way too much for me. But after a while, you start to feel a lot more endeared towards her and you realize her motives and her mission is a lot more righteous than what we previously thought, right?
Right?
Whereas before, Andy being betrayed by Miles and having this, you know, you betrayed me, you guys all betrayed me, I'm going to get revenge. That feels like, okay, cool, we get it. But having her sister trying to seek justice for her sister, to me, is a lot more compelling
mm-hmm.
than it is maybe a revenge tour for Andy.
Well, and that was it was almost, I guess, halfway through the film when it was a complete reset of the film in
yeah.
a sense, because they went back. And I almost felt like when I was watching it, because the Andy character was so angry, you know, and it was kind of like, where are they going with it? Like,
mm-hmm.
where is he going to take this? And then when they had the reveal, it worked. I thought she did a great job. Do you have a favorite moment?
Yes, I would say my favorite moment is Benoit Blanc's final speech, the famous Miles Braun is an idiot speech.
Yeah.
I feel like that entire thing, because obviously the donut within a donut speech in the first movie
yes.
is iconic.
Yeah.
So it's hard to follow that up. But I really do feel like this one did in a very different way, where they explain to you very specifically what Benoit Blanc has done in his head throughout the entire time he was on the island, which is break down exactly what is going on and realizing, wait a minute, this super tech genius billionaire is actually not a super tech genius billionaire. He is just a fake, you know, someone who is just used to, you know, BSing his way through bringing people into his company
right.
and claiming he's this smart guy and using all these people around him to make as much money as possible. And then threatening them in the same breath, and him breaking down exactly what he is and exactly what he's done throughout the entire movie to show you that he's actually a fake, to me, is just incredible. I mean, the way he's like, think about what he actually did, not what he told you, but what you saw with your eyes is what he says in that speech. And I thought that was such a powerful statement, considering that's kind of the world we're living in now, where a lot of people can be like, wait a minute, I'm going to claim one thing and say this is who I am, when in reality, that's not what we're seeing at all. And I felt like that was such a relevant speech to have nowadays. Mm-hmm. And the way Benoit Blanc just laid it out with this Southern accent was just perfect.
And that's sort of the title, Glass Onion. Yeah. Like, in plain sight in is plain the sight. Thing that he talks about.
Hey, I'm Jamie.
And I'm Justina.
And we're the hosts of Just So You Know, a podcast where we get to the bottom of suspicious stories and outright lies we're being told by companies that profit off of animals.
You think Elon Musk is shady? Wait until you hear our episode about his sinister brain experiments.
First he ruined Twitter, now he's coming for your actual brain.
No.
We've also got one about that time I stormed the runway at New York Fashion Week to protest Coach's leather handbags.
Yeah, I heard they weren't happy about that.
I couldn't tell you. They're not talking to me at the moment.
And we're just getting started. In the coming weeks, we're going to blow the lid off of everything from shady pet dealers to monkeys held hostage by coconut milk companies to the astonishing secret behind the no animals were harmed message you see at the end of movies.
And so much more. We'll hope you join us for this surprisingly fun journey full of strange characters, secretive companies, and a whole world of stuff they really don't want you to know.
Subscribe to Just So You Know wherever you get your podcasts and look for our new episodes every Thursday. Just So You Know is a PETA production.
If you like a good murder mystery story, you'll love June's Journey, a free hidden object mobile game where Detective June Parker unravels the mystery of her sister's death. Travel back to the beautifully illustrated 20s, find clues, discover hidden objects, and watch the story unfold with new chapters released weekly. Put your detective skills to the test. Download June's Journey on Android or iOS, or play online via Facebook games.
One of my favorite moments, and it's going to kind of lead me into the next question, was actually a cameo with Ethan Hawke.
Oh.
When everybody's on the dock and he shoots everybody in the mouth with whatever was supposed to cure everybody from COVID.
Yeah.
And Benoit is the only one that kind of questions it. And he's like, what are you putting in my mouth? And he's like, you don't need that mask anymore. And he goes, you're good.
Yeah.
You're good. What he said, I mean, talk about having like, there's no small roles. That he had how many lines in the movie? Three. And that scene, there was so much in it. I also just loved the way that was shot. And part of what I liked about the way this, what he did with this film, and I don't know if he necessarily did it with the last one, but Ryan talked about this, with the cinematography, where he would have, like, especially on the dock, when you saw Benoit, and then you would see all the players behind him sort of, like, getting on the boat, he would shoot somebody in extreme close-up, and then there was a reveal behind them. Yeah. And there was even a shot, there was a shot at the pool scene where Janelle's character was at the pool, and Kate Hudson's big hat was sort of covering her up, and then it kind of, there was a lot of sort of, like, smoke and mirrors, like the reveal, the big reveal. And it was just, it was a technique that sort of adds to that murder mystery element where things are hiding or lurking. And it kind of, when the first time you're watching it, you're like, is that a clue? Is that a clue? I have a question though. And then I'm going to ask you your favorite cameo. The kombucha. Explain the kombucha. Was it a red herring?
As far as...
Like, she kept chugging, and I was sure something was going to happen. Like, there was going to be a twist at the end, that there was something in the kombucha. But she kept chugging it, but then it was just sort of like a plug, right?
Yeah, I feel like that was just mainly to show you that she was just confused as far as, like, what these high-end products are.
Right.
As far as, like, alcoholic kombucha and stuff like that. Like, she wasn't used to that kind of stuff, so...
Yeah, because I was just... I was watching it going, this is a clue. This is definitely... this is a clue. So what was your favorite cameo?
Ooh. Probably Serena Williams.
Really? Oh my God.
I thought it was hysterical. I thought it was so funny to see her just like, I mean, the first time I saw her and you see her turn around and just be like, are we going to work out, guys? Like, are we doing something or not? Like, this is your money, your time. I thought that was pretty funny for
and
sure.
And we have to give a shout out to Hugh Grant.
Yeah, Hugh Grant
I think
was great.
He's the internet's favorite.
Yes.
Like, people have been, he's sort of having a renaissance, I feel like. And this is... You know, hopefully we're going to see more of him down the road. I think Daniel has said, like, he would love to do more and have more of him in that relationship in future films. So let's go down the line. Let's talk about some of the other players in the film, some of the other characters. Aside from, we've already talked about Janelle's character and Daniel, who is the next favorite if you had to choose?
It's tough, right?
Yeah.
It's tough because I feel like each character in this movie, like you said in the first one feels like a very much like a family kind of character vibes. Whereas this one to me is a much more broader, more archetype kind of character where it's like the scientist, the governor, the streamer, the crazy fashion model. Like each one has a very broad, general money-making career choice. So I feel like one that to me is a little bit underrated, and I'll give a shout out to, is Catherine Hahn. Because I feel like Catherine Hahn is such a good actress that I feel a lot of people forget just how good she is. And if you go back and rewatch the movie, you could see so many details into her acting choices and the way she's able to demonstrate her posturing, the way she moves her mask up and down, the way she's able to communicate with different characters, the way she talks to Benoit Blanc, the way she talks to Leslie Odom's character. Like, she has so much flair, such a different and diverse kind of acting style that she brings to every character, that to me, I feel like Catherine Hahn is good in everything she's in. Like, there's no movie or show that she's not just so good in.
You're right, because in a sense, like, I wouldn't say she's the flashiest character amongst a sea of flashy characters in this, but she's seamless. Mm. Like, her acting, and I would say the same thing about, like, David Shannon in the last one, where it's almost like not the standout character, but...
Michael Shannon. Yeah.
Let me take that back. It was Michael Shannon in the last one, where you feel like he wasn't the standout character, but overall, when I went back and watched it, I was like, oh, you know what? I forgot about him because he's an actor.
Yeah.
Not that the others aren't. I want to give a shout out to Madeline Klein as Whiskey. I thought she was really fun. And I think partly because I guess she was in Outer Banks. I never watched that. So I don't really know her. So to see somebody come into that caliber of cast and really hold her own. And I just think she has that sort of, she reminds me a little bit of Florence Pugh. She's kind of got a little bit of that vibe. She's kind of got that cool girl vibe about her. And even though she's playing, you know, the hot girl, she's obviously, there's the reveal that she's very smart when she's talking to Janelle's character when they have that one-on-one. But yeah, she was just kind of refreshing. I thought she was really refreshing. But I have to give a shout out to Dave Bautista.
Yeah.
And I was so pissed that he died so early because he is a blast.
Yes.
Now, here's my big question. There's one that, you know, everybody is always doing this when they watch a Knives Out movie. And I go down a rabbit hole on Twitter to look for people who look for holes in the plot where they didn't think of everything. So here's my question. And I'm sorry to put you on the spot. But you know when Miles Braun, when he gets the Google alert before he dies, Dave's character.
Yeah.
And he shows it to Miles. And that's why Miles poisons him, because he realizes that Cassandra is dead, right?
Yes.
How did he know he murdered her and that she didn't commit suicide?
Because he saw her, because he saw him leaving
the house. He saw him leaving, but does that mean he killed her?
No, because he didn't know when he went to the house and she didn't respond. He just assumed, whatever, she's doing her own thing.
Right.
But once he saw that she came up dead, he put two and two together. Dave's character put two and two together and was like, wait a minute. If he was leaving the house, and I saw him that night, and now they're telling me she's dead, that was just like a week ago. He must have had a hand in killing her, is what his kind of head was going to.
You know what my head would have done?
Yeah.
Look, everybody. Oh, my God. Like, maybe I was putting Drax on this character, because Drax wouldn't have done that.
No.
But... yeah, this character was a little bit savvier and was blackmailing him from the get-go.
Yeah.
It was just like, here, you're going to put me on.
I think he figured it out once he realized, like, wait a minute, I saw him leaving the house. That was just last week, and now they're telling me she's dead.
That was a quick deduction. Yeah. He should be the next Benoit Blanc.
He should, yeah. too late.
Yeah, right?
Yeah, too bad.
Okay, so let's go down the line. Let's talk about the rest of the characters. We talked about Catherine Hahn. What did you think of Leslie Odom Jr.'s character as Lionel? I feel like he maybe was a little underutilized in
a
sense.
I feel like he definitely played... I think someone else might have said this, the adult in the room. He kind of played the I'm the serious guy. I'm the much more thinking guy. I'm going to push back a little bit against Miles. Not too much. You know, I still want money, but I'm going to push back just a little bit to make myself seem like I'm a little bit more high and mighty than everyone else.
Yeah.
I feel like that was his character, where in a way he was just as bad as everyone else, but he himself perceived himself to be just a little bit more righteous and a little bit moralistic than everyone else. So I feel like that is his character, and I think he played it really well.
Who would have been the adult in the room that Knives Out in the original?
Probably Jamie Lee Curtis's character, I feel like.
Yeah. I guess in the end she was, right?
Yeah, she was a little bit more sensible.
A quick answer for that. I love it. Yeah. What about Kate Hudson as Birdie? I feel like she was the one that kind of a lot of people loved. And I feel like Kate was just kind of playing Kate. I feel like that's her, in a sense.
She's
stupid. Not that part of it, but the kind of like,
yeah,
you know, when she sees everybody, she's a big personality.
Yeah, she was definitely the ditzy kind of comedic, you know, comedic tension kind of release as far as the character goes, and just bringing a lot of joy and fun and funny one-liners too. She had the famous "What is reality" line when Ellen came back. I thought that was great. Like, it was definitely the ignorance is bliss kind of character, where her ignorance is her excuse for doing horrible things and saying horrible things, like throughout the entire
joke.
Yeah, because throughout the entire movie they make it a point to tell you all the things she's done is through ignorance, but it still doesn't excuse what she's done, right? And what she's said, where, you know, Benoit Blanc has that famous line where, you know, as far as,
that's the line that I think everybody's talking about, right?
Because it was incredible. I remember watching that in the theater, in my screening, and everyone was like, like, it really felt like a Marvel moment, where it felt like a superhero kind of moment, because the line was such a relevant moment, where he's talking about the danger of mistaking speaking the truth with speaking without thought.
Yes.
Like, it's a dangerous thing to mistake speaking the truth to speaking without thought. And that, to me, embodied so much of the message of what this movie's about, where a lot of these characters really do feel like they're better than everyone else. And that danger of thinking like, I'm just going to say the truth. I'm going to say what no one else is wanting to say because I have this superior mentality, like the way Miles Braun said, the disruptor mentality, as far as like...
I hated that word.
Yeah, right? Where it's like you have this superiority complex where you feel like you're better than everyone else. And that thought process of saying, me saying this stuff makes me better and makes me, you know, the truth speaker. When in reality, it's no thought. It's a lack of thought. It's fake. It's a facade. And it's coming from a place of ignorance, which is exactly what Birdie's character is.
Yeah. And I remember the last film, Knives Out, they sent out T-shirts during award season that said, eat shit. Because that was kind of the line that popped off that movie.
Yeah.
And it's interesting that I feel like if there was a T-shirt made that was the tagline for this one, it would be about that. It would be that.
Yeah.
And it's a totally different thing. It's much more, it's a much deeper message than obviously shit. But I feel like that was the line. And I wonder when Ryan wrote it, if I got to talk to him about it, I would ask him, like, did he build a lot of, when did that line come to him? Like, was it early on, and he sort of built the story around, or did it come to him as he was just sort of writing that scene? Because it's pretty much, like you said, sums everything up. Okay, we haven't talked about Jessica Henwick as Peg. Smaller role.
Yeah.
Yeah, what did you feel about her?
I love her. I really do feel like I've loved her in everything she's in. And I know I already said this about Catherine Hahn, but I really do feel like Jessica is just... This is my small soapbox as far as my Jessica rant. But I feel like Jessica is so good in everything she's in. Obviously, she was in Game of Thrones. Small role in Game of Thrones. Small role in Star Wars. Her bigger role was in Iron Fist. And her bigger role was in the new Matrix movie, Matrix Resurrections, where she played Bugs. She is so good in that Matrix movie, and she is so good in Iron Fist. And I know a lot of people don't like Iron Fist, but I feel like she is such on a come up, and she's making these new movies. And she's really, to me, reaching this level as far as a up-and-coming young actress who can really do some work in Hollywood and really have some major significant roles. So I wish we saw more of her, but I get her role, which is mainly just being the assistant and just being there and being the one odd man out, odd woman out,
yeah,
as far as this entire cast of like rich people, where even Whiskey's character, you know, could still probably claim to have a little bit more of this connection to Miles, whereas Peg had no connection to Miles, and Miles didn't even know her name. So.
Right, right. When she was begging him on the stairs, and he just was having no, he was like, and you are, how the hell did you get here, kind of thing. Okay, so let's end things on, if we're talking about characters, let's end things on Miles Braun himself, Ed Norton.
Mm.
I mean, fourth watch, flawless performance.
Mm.
Really flawless, I think. I mean, talk about nailing a caricature of a type of person without, there's a hammer behind you, a Thor hammer, like without hitting it over the head and still making it his own. Like, it's one of those roles where I watch it now, I watched it again last night and I thought nobody could have done it better.
Yeah.
And that's the kind of, that's when you know you've done a great job, is when nobody could have done a better job than what you did. What did you think?
He's incredible. And it's one of those things where Edward Norton is such an incredible actor. A lot of people forget his role in, I think of his role in Birdman, which to me had like a similar vibe where he plays this kind of bigger, bombastic character. But his eccentric attitude, his smug attitude, that all that he brought to this role to bring this tech billionaire to life and to show you the layers of what he actually is. Whereas like when you peel it back, you realize like, wait a minute, this guy is not who he says he is. And to me, his character had so much commentary as far as what it is to be in this world that we currently live in. And as far as what it is to have these billionaires claim to be these big, powerful geniuses who are actually not, and who are actually beneath a lot of people, but claim to be superior than everyone else. So to me, he just nailed that.
You know, it's a fun moment to go back and watch again. When Cassandra comes up on the dock, his face, they do a close-up of his face.
He and really when does you feel know, like he saw a ghost.
Yeah. But when you watch it the first time, they're giving you, it's like what Benoit Blanc says, they're giving you the movie. It's in plain sight. In plain sight, Rian Johnson showed you in that moment who the killer was.
On my rewatch, I also noticed a few things, but on my rewatch, I noticed everything is actually there, right? Where when he says, oh, he took my drink by mistake, you see him pass him the drink. On the first watch, they don't do a different cut or they don't do a different scene to it. They show you exactly what he did. They show you Benoit Blanc's character say Helen when he sees her on the stairs. Like, there's so many little clues there, and it's all in plain sight. It's nothing hidden. It's all there. For when you see it again, you start to realize, wait a minute, everything was already here before, and Rian Johnson just presented it to you, but then gave you all this Miles Braun kind of theatricality to cover it up, when in reality, his storytelling was actually just a cover up for what actually happened. So to me, it's just incredible what he did.
Anything that didn't work for you in this film?
Probably it's a small nitpick, but probably the ending when she's smashing the glass. It might have gone on for a little too long, in my opinion. I feel like we got to the point as far as what the hydrogen gas was going to do, and she was going to explode the glass onion. But to me, when she was smashing the glass, it took me quite a few seconds.
I didn't know what she was doing.
I was like, what is going on?
I know.
Is this a statement?
I'm so glad that you felt
Is it an effective statement? I don't know.
I thought it was, I was like, when he said, you know, an ounce of courage, he hands her the glass and he says, this is giving you courage. I guess courage is just smash the crap out of everything. And it really didn't feed into the hydrogen.
It didn't hit until later is my thing. Yeah.
Yeah. Like it kept going.
It took a second. Yeah.
And then everybody, I guess part of it, everybody else joined in, and that's when they turned on Miles. So that was it?
That was
Anything
it.
Else? I have a couple. I have a couple. Yeah. I mean, we kind of talked a little bit about the characters, where I felt like in the first one, the characters were a little bit more, and I know they're not supposed to be likable. So when I say shallower, I don't mean, because that's sort of part of,
yeah,
you're not really supposed to like anybody in these films. But I felt like there was a lot of scenes where people were just sort of sitting around, not engaging with each other. Where in the first one, every character had an active purpose at every second, whether they were going after, like when Anna's character was given the inheritance and they were going after her and they were all like, how are you doing? Yeah. Or there was always an active, like, and that's something I took acting classes way back. And that's what my acting coach taught me, is that you always have to have a purpose in a scene.
Yeah.
If you're just bored and you don't want to be there, that will come across to the audience and the audience won't be invested. You always have to have something you got to get from the other person or out of the scene, or you're something that drives you. So I felt like a little bit of that sort of, they were hanging out. The other thing is, just selfishly, I love destination movies. You know, I just love anything to do with the beach, like The Beach with Leonardo DiCaprio. I love that movie. Any destination, I wanted to see more freaking Greece. They went to Greece to shoot this thing. And a lot of it was inside.
Yeah.
So I think I wanted just to sort of revel more in, like, we saw the glass onion. That was cool. We saw his tacky room. But I think when they first arrived on the island and they put the wristbands on us and then they had the robot go by, I wanted to explore more of this guy's lair.
I kind of feel like that was on purpose, though. I kind of feel like the idea of this guy who has it all and who's literally has a private Greek island prefers to surround himself with paintings and art and glass structures than just enjoy the nature of what it is to be a rich guy. But he'd rather be inside and play his little game.
He couldn't drive his own car.
Yeah, like he put his car on a pedestal. I feel like that was commentary as far as, wait a minute, you have an incredible, beautiful, fast car, but you put it on the pedestal, like you don't even drive it. You live in a Greek island, but you don't walk around the beach. You walk around inside and play games. Like, to me, that was a little bit more of commentary into what the Miles Brown's character is.
Yeah, and I think part of, again, the inconsistency for me was that they wanted to leave after a day, and yet they would lie under oath for him. So that was a bit confusing to me. Like, you'll lie under oath. And I feel like Kate Hudson's character was the one that sort of kissed his butt the most, where a lot of them just sort of express their disdain for him. Mm-hmm. But that also lends itself to what you're saying, is he kind of has to buy his friends in a way and do this elaborate mystery box and whatever, and to get them to come out. And then within less than 24 hours, other than the murder mystery part of it, they're kind of bored. Here's my thing. Okay. Where do you think he should go? Like, where do you think Ryan should go with the franchise moving forward? He's already said they're going to do another one. Daniel Craig has said he's signed up for however many more. Personally, I would love, because we know Ed Norton's character is going to jail, right? We know Chris Evans' character is in jail. I want them to be cellmates, break out, and do like a Bonnie and Clyde kind of movie.
They're doing a Morbius Vulture team up. Like, Jared Leto shows up because he mentioned him in this one. I don't know about that. It's
that,
like, a villains super team.
I want a super team up against Benoit Blanc. All the villains in all of them. Eventually, they should have like their version of the Avengers, where it's just like a team of like Knives
guys,
Out Six is
and
like a
like,
team
we're gonna
of
get
bad
revenge
guys.
Against Benoit Blanc,
wreaking havoc.
He put us in jail.
So where do you think Ryan should just, if it's not broke, don't fix it? Like, just go to a different destination and pick another cool cast, or do you think he needs to switch up either the tone or whatever, like in the next?
I mean, if there's any theme inside these movies, it's about corruption with big money, right?
Yeah.
So I feel like we saw the tech billionaire, we saw the old money when it comes to the first movie. There's so much there to explore. I mean, if I'm being selfish, because that's kind of how I am, I kind of want to see a sports angle to it, because there's so much corruption in sports that I think it would be kind of interesting to see maybe a sports cover-up story, because I'm kind of inundated with that watching ESPN constantly. So I see kind of the corruption in the NFL or maybe soccer or maybe, you know, any kind of big sport there comes to. I feel like it'd be kind of interesting to see a cover-up murder inside this major sporting event. I think that'd be kind of interesting.
Wow. Any dream cast?
Ooh. I don't know. Someone incredible? Oh, Michael Fassbender. How about that?
Michael Fassbender.
Yeah.
You know what? Michael Fassbender could have been a good Miles Braun too, actually.
Yeah, he could have. Yeah. He's a great actor.
He's definitely a good one.
His Steve Jobs role.
Yeah. No, people. Oh, yeah. He kind of already did it, didn't he? Well, that was quick. I think I'm kind of the mentality, if it's not broke, don't fix it.
Yeah.
Like, I think it's working. People obviously love these movies. And he's struck a cultural nerve while doing films that are possibly going to get nominations.
Yes.
Or, you know, this film's possibly going to get some nominations. And that's just really hard to do. It's really hard to. And when you hear, like, if somebody had said to you, oh, I'm going to pitch you a movie, it's an Agatha Christie. Doesn't sound that sexy, right?
Mm-hmm.
It just doesn't sound like people have tried it. It's kind of okay. People aren't really loving the murder mystery genre, but he is just crushing it. As long as he keeps those stories tight with good twists, I think it's really about, at the end of the day, the story, and the sky's the limit in terms of he could cast whoever he wants. Florence Pugh, I would love to see in one of these movies.
It's a great one. Florence Pugh's amazing.
She would
I love her.
Fantastic. I'm trying to think of somebody else. Penelope Cruz, she's one of my favorite actresses. I think she could play a really interesting, she could almost play the villain. I think that would be really fun to see her do something like that. Let's talk about award season. So it's nominated at the Golden Globes for musical or comedy. I don't know if you've had a chance to look at the other nominees, but what do you think its chances are?
Ooh, can I, do you know the other nominees?
Yeah, we can pull it up. I mean, I know the one that I think is the biggest competition is Everything Everywhere All at Once.
Oh, yeah.
In that category. So the nominees for the Golden Globes for musical or comedy are Babylon, Banshees of Inisherin, Everything Everywhere All at Once, Glass Onion, and Triangle of Sadness.
Okay.
So what do you think?
I think it's pretty slim, if I'm being honest.
Really?
Yes.
I think that is a shocking twist that I did not expect to hear from you.
I feel like the momentum behind Everything All at Once is so big.
Yeah.
And I feel like Triangle of Sadness is also an international feature, which Golden Globe has a big connection international, obviously.
Okay.
Critics. So that's probably the second runner-up, and maybe behind that. But even then, the amount of love that Colin Farrell is getting for Banshees of Inisherin is huge. It's tough. It's very tough.
This one is tough.
Yeah.
For a couple of reasons. Obviously, we all know the Golden Globes took a couple of years off. They changed the makeup of their body of voters. They tended in the past to really go for movie stars. They love movie stars. They love, you know, like, I mean, The Martian won for Best Musical or Comedy. Let's not forget that, okay?
Yeah.
So it'll be interesting to see this year if they go in a different direction. I feel like Everything Everywhere All at Once in past years might not have won.
Mm-hmm.
I feel like the sort of way they used to vote favors Glass Onion because it's a huge ensemble movie star, splashy, enjoyable movie. Triangle of Sadness, I don't know if they all, you know, it doesn't have the... People aren't talking about it as much. Babylon is so polarizing, don't get me started. And Banshees is the other one. But is it, when I hear musical or comedy, I feel like that almost bordered on drama.
Sure.
So I don't know. I kind of think it could win. And let's not forget, Netflix is really good at campaigning.
It's true.
So I think they could do great. And then moving forward to the Oscars, so Knives Out, as we talked about earlier, was nominated for Best Original. I think Ryan's a shoo-in for a nomination for Best Adapted. And the other two, I don't have all, like, obviously the nominees haven't come out yet, but the other two that are sort of the front runners in that category would be Women Talking or She Said.
Mm.
I feel like Ryan's going to win for this.
Mm.
And I'll tell you why, because I think it's going to be sort of the body of work.
Mm-hmm.
Where he's going to win for
Knives
the
Out.
Last one
yes.
and this one together.
I agree.
I think this is a lock for him.
Yeah.
What do you think?
I definitely feel like it's up there for sure, considering I feel like this is his best quality, right? His writing. I feel like a lot of people, can take away certain things as far as what Ryan does, but his writing is so stellar, so elite, so well done, mm-hmm. that I feel like it's just tough to keep up with him. So I really do feel like this is definitely his biggest opportunity to win.
Do you think it gets a Best Picture nominee at the Oscars?
I do.
Yeah, I do too. Because I think they're having 10 for sure this year.
Yeah.
And it definitely gets in.
I agree.
It's got that, you know, the Oscars want to be relevant.
Yes.
And this is also
a makeup for Knives Out, in my opinion. Because I was,
right.
as I mentioned before, I felt like Knives Out should have been nominated for Best Picture.
Right. I think, you know what? I forgot that it wasn't.
Yeah, it wasn't. I wanted it to, but... Yeah.
So again, and that's what the Oscars does, is they tend to, you know, they tend to...
Make up for,
you know, people win for things that they shouldn't necessarily act for actress.
Yeah.
It's their body of work. So I feel like he's going to get... it is a way for them to be cool, young, relevant at the Oscars. I think it's getting in for sure.
Yeah.
Any other nominations you see for it? Any other performances or...
I mean, Jenna Monáe is probably...
Yeah.
You know, most likely. She has a shot, but I don't feel like it's as strong as of a shot as probably other performances throughout the year. But I feel like that's probably it. Production design, wardrobe, maybe.
Costume. Production design.
Yeah.
Can we give Benoit Blanc a freaking nomination? Can we give his scarf a freaking nomination?
No, I just
I think it's always hard for actors who play more of comedic roles to get those nominations.
Yeah.
But I think award shows should start to do that and award those performances, because he has crafted a character that is so undeniable at this point. People want to see more of it. As much as people made of the accent, I can't get enough of it.
Yes, I agree. I really do. I really do feel like when it comes to these types of comedies, right?
Yeah.
Because there's obviously all different types of comedies, but when it comes to comedies that are able to balance so many different themes and still be able to communicate a really well put together message throughout the entire movie, but still do it in a very satirical, kind of throwback kind of way.
Yeah.
It's 100% worthy to me.
Yeah.
For a nomination.
Right before we go out, I just remembered my next favorite moment in this movie. And that was the destruction of the Mona Lisa herself.
I hate even saying it.
But to voyeuristically think about what that meant.
Yeah.
And the genius of how it tied in from the beginning of him saying he wanted to be recognized in the same breath as the Mona Lisa. And the fact that it was his freaking hydrogen that blew it up.
Yeah.
How brilliant was that?
It's crazy. It really was. Because it really takes you a minute to realize what is going on, right?
Yeah.
Because at first you're like, okay, she blew up the glass onion. Sure. That's not really going to do much. But then you realize the Mona Lisa was there. So when the Mona Lisa burned, and she explains it very well, the way Helen explains it, where she's like, your product destroyed the Mona Lisa.
Yes.
You're done. Like your career's over.
Yeah. And he needed it spelled out to him a little bit.
Yeah, he did.
He was just kind of mad. He didn't realize his life was completely over until she pointed out to him. And then the ships came in with all the sirens. And Benoit sat there with his cigar, just enjoying the moment.
And she actually did the Mona Lisa pose and the Mona Lisa smile at the very end. I didn't catch this. Someone else told me this. She did the little pose in the little Mona Lisa smile.
On the stairs?
No, in the seat at the edge when the ships were coming in, when the police were coming in.
Oh, she did.
Yeah. Yeah.
Okay, I'm watching it a fifth time. There you go.
It's incredible. It really is.
I'm going to go
the
back and watch that
incredible
moment. Yeah. And I'm going to freeze it and see if her eyes follow me wherever I go. Oh my gosh, Andreas, this was such a blast.
Thank you so much. Yeah, this was amazing.
It's fun talking about a movie that, you know, is a fun movie.
Right? Yeah.
Yeah.
I really do feel that. And it's cool that it's on Netflix and that a lot of people can check it out too.
And yeah, you can watch it over. Yeah, I can go back. I can go home and watch it.
There's so many movies now that people are like, you got to see this. I'm like, where?
Yeah.
Where am I going to watch it?
Yeah.
Where can I see
it? But it was also brilliant that they did that 1 week theatrical release, because people got to go watch it in a theater. And that was the first time I watched it. Like I said, somebody did spoil some things for me, but I did see it with a crowd, and it's fun listening to everybody react to it in that way. But remind everybody where they can find you, and thank you so much for joining. This was a blast. Good to see your face in person.
Absolutely.
Yes.
Yes. Thank you so much, Nikki. Yeah, you can find me on Twitter and Instagram at Squad Leader Race, and my YouTube channel and podcast at First Cut.
And I'm Nikki Novak. And thank you all so, so much for listening to this episode of The After Show. We had a blast chatting. We hope you enjoy your pineapple juice, and we'll see you hopefully on the next one. Bye.